Well, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another News in Focus program. This is Pastor Sean Harris from Fayetteville, North Carolina. I am responding to an article that was emailed to me after our podcast about why vote for a Mormon or why not vote for a Mormon. This article was emailed to me from a listener, and it is actually a blog posting addressing arguments to vote for Mitt Romney. This author has decided not to vote for Mitt Romney and will be voting for a third-party candidate, and he explains why he will be doing that. So I would like to go through and just take a look at his argument and then discuss it with you. Now let's first begin by saying I agree with this author in so much as we all can agree to disagree. I mean, let's face it, you have essentially four choices in the month of November. You can cast a vote for the current president. You can cast a vote for the Republican challenger. You can cast a vote for a third-party candidate, whether that be one that's on the ballot or whether you write in a name. Or option number four, you can stay home. You can decide that there is not enough worth going to vote for. Those are essentially your options. And let's face it, of those four options, born-again Christians are going to fall in those four categories. There'll be some born-again Christians that vote for the current president. There'll be some that vote for the Mormon. There'll be some that vote for the write-in candidate or the libertarian candidate, and then there'll be a fourth category that will not vote at all. And let's be absolutely clear, don't even bother posting anything on the comment section of Sermon Audio. This is not a litmus test for how or whether you're a Christian. Don't bother posting anything ridiculous like you can't be a Christian and vote for the current president, or you can't be a Christian and vote for a Mormon, or you can't be a Christian and vote for someone who denies the deity of Christ. Let's all agree to recognize that Christians can fall into any of these four categories as their conscience guides them, as they pray about this. The article says, I'm not voting for Barack Obama, and has an entire separate issue there posting with that regard. So we know that that's not his position. He says, my stance on Mitt Romney has been the same since last year and has only been bolstered in 2012. As rolled along, it probably was back in March when I posted on Facebook that this would be the first year in my voting history that I will not have voted for a Republican candidate. Stirred up much discussion. He talks about the fact that the discussion was decent. He says, before I get into the main reasons I will not be voting for Romney, let me first address some of the common arguments I see being used this election cycle. He says, number one, the lesser of two evils argument. Any clear-thinking Christian knows this is a self-defeating phrase when used to compare two simple men. I needed to learn this myself. Now, let's be clear. His very statement, any clear-thinking Christian, implies that if you don't subscribe to his idea that this is a self-defeating phrase, then you're not a clear-thinking Christian. So I would ask the author to be a little bit more respectful with regard to these polarizing of opinion. I would submit to you that every single time a choice is made, it is choosing the lesser of two evils. I would submit to you that when he chooses to vote for a third party candidate, that he is voting for the lesser of three evils, not the lesser of two evils, but the lesser of three evils. He goes on to say, obviously, if two pagans are running against each other, and while one pagan's moral compass might be screwed on a little tighter than his opponent, at the end of the day, both men are still evil. Okay, so he, again, subscribes to that. So the question then becomes, I'm not voting this way just because it's the lesser of two evils. I'm making a comparison between two or three or four candidates and choosing the one that I think is the better man or more aligns with the values that I have or more aligns with whatever the criteria that I establish is necessary to win my vote, whether that be fiscal conservative or whether that be a war hawk, or whether that be a libertarian, or whether that be a progressive, it really doesn't matter. That's all you're doing is you're comparing individuals, and that's all the lesser of two arguments is the fact that we do, in the end, compare individuals and then choose the best we can as to which one we should vote for. Okay, argument number two, he says that he doesn't like is the I'm voting for a commander-in-chief, not a pastor-in-chief. I'm amused by this statement, as it usually spoken by people who assume those who are not voting for their guy is indeed looking for a pastor-in-chief. No, that is not the case at all. That is not what that argument is all about. That argument is simply being presented to say that this man is not going to be my spiritual leader. Therefore, he does not have to align with me theologically. I am not concerned with his stand on pre-trib, mid-trib, post-tribulation, rapture of Christ, or the church, rather, the rapture of the church. That the point is, he's not a theologian in chief. That the separation of church and state in the United States gives us enough freedom of religion that we do not have to be primarily concerned with the man's religious affiliation. Now, if this argument is taken to the extreme, as it has been by one of the people that listens to the News and Focus program, it suggests that it would be okay to vote for a Muslim. I would disagree with that wholeheartedly, only because of the jihad pillar within the Islamic faith or the Sharia law issue within the Islamic faith. And again, faith is being a generous word. More accurately, I should say false religion. He says, one does not have to be a Christian to agree with me on these issues. If one disagrees with me, there are sure not to get my vote. Now, the issues that he makes reference to are life, marriage, and Israel. Life, marriage, and Israel. He says, Romney fails on one out of the three, so he doesn't even qualify for me to consider not voting for him. Now, more on that later. So I guess he's going to write another blog post. I would submit to you that although that there is a podcast and there is a video on Sermon Audio with regard to Romney's flip-flopping on abortion, I would submit to you that what Romney represents is the man behind the Republican platform. And if you look at the Republican platform in comparison to the Democratic platform, there is no flip-flopping on this issue. There is no flip-flopping on this issue in the platform perspective. What you have is a Democratic Party who is becoming more and more catering and aggressive towards the pro-choice stand and a catering towards the Planned Parenthood perspective. And then you have a... You have a Republican Party who has taken a consistent stand without regard to individuals in the party, but the party itself has taken a consistent stand for pro-life. And then you have other political entities. And certainly we would consider those candidates. Ron Paul stands out, and he stands out as a possibility. So then this kind of brings us to the third argument that he presents here. Not voting for, insert the candidate's name here, is a vote for the evil guy. So I mentioned the Ron Paul because he is a possible third candidate, I suppose, on some states, depending if he got enough votes, he could be there. So insert voting for Ron Paul is a vote for the evil guy. And so our author says, statistically speaking, yes, this may be true. Frank Turk puts up an article addressing math and elections a couple weeks ago. He has a good point insofar as laying out the statistical reality of not voting at all or voting for a third party equates a bust for the Republicans. I agree. However, my decision for voting is not based on math or pragmatism for that matter, but rather conviction. Now, this is where I would like to just entertain an idea with you. I believe that one of the reasons why people will consider voting for Mickey Mouse instead of the Republican or the Democrat, or will consider staying home instead of voting for the Republican or the Democrat, because they're disgusted that there's a Mormon that is representing the Republican Party, and they are exasperated with the current president. I believe that the reason we believe that option 3 or 4 is acceptable is because of the entire electoral college system, whereby it seems as though my vote doesn't count. My vote doesn't count. There's just so many people voting that my vote really doesn't make a difference. Now, I would submit to you that if, let's just say for the sake of discussion, that the Senate determined the president. The 100 senators determined the president of the United States. Only 100. 100 senators. Let's just say for the sake of discussion that's the case. All right, now, having understood the criteria is that a new system is in place and 100 senators will vote for the next president of the United States. Now, I want to ask you a question, and I need you to think about this. If you found out that your senator, one of your senators, or both of your senators, chose to vote for Mickey Mouse, or the third party candidate, or did not show up to cast one of the 100 deciding votes, would you be okay with that? And I think the answer is you would not. I think the answer is you would be disgusted. I think the answer is you would be repulsed. I think the answer is you would be exasperated with a senator if he was one of the 100 senators that was going to decide who the next president of the United States is. One of the 100. And he or she chose to write in Mickey Mouse, or to write in a name, or to vote for the third party candidate. And you knew that that could be the deciding vote. Would you be okay with it? Would you be okay with that? Or would you expect math or pragmatism to be incorporated into the thinking of the person? Wouldn't you just be exasperated if you lost by one or two, or the candidate that you were just knew you weren't going to vote for? In this case, the article makes it clear. He says, I'm not going to vote for Barack Obama. I'm not voting for Obama. So if you found out that your senator from your state who his failure to vote for the current the challenger, the Republican challenger, it resulted in a failure for the challenger, would you be okay with that? You see, I think that's really the issue. Number 4, he says, if you're not voting for person A, you must vote against person B. If you're not voting for person A, you must vote against person B. He says, I can buy that argument up to a certain point. And see, this is where we're at, up to a certain point. If, in fact, he knew that there were only 100 senators deciding that, then clearly this would win. This would win. I mean, we can all agree, I think, in the listening audience, we can all agree that the incumbent has an advantage. The incumbent has an advantage. And the challenger has quite the challenge in front of him to get out a sufficient vote to vote the incumbent in. I mean, the probability is you'll get a second term. Most presidents get a second term. And so it takes a significant challenger, to win. It takes a significant number of votes. Getting the vote out, all those are factors. He says, yes, we have the radical pro-abortion Barack Obama as the incumbent, but our other choice isn't exactly pro-life. And that's really the issue. That's what's throwing this gentleman off. And I would submit to you that, again, it goes back to what is the platform of the Republican Party? And what do we expect this president to do? Especially if he has any aspirations for a second term, if Mitt Romney gets elected and he turns his back on the Republican Party, you can be sure he will be a one-term president. I believe the man will do what is expedient, and for him as a Republican, what is expedient is to cater to the base. And you say, well, where do you get that from? And I get that from this exact thing, and I believe it's a very legitimate argument. Somebody, please explain to me why he picked Paul Ryan as his vice president candidate. I mean, there was much discussion occurring that he was going to pick a moderate. And instead, what did he do? He went with one of the most conservative individuals he could find, who has a staunch pro-life position. That in and of itself seems to indicate to me that he's not flipping, he's not wishy-washy, he knows the stand that he must take, and he is going to take that. He's not the governor of Massachusetts anymore, he's the president of the United States, and he's not in the liberal state of Massachusetts, he's in, I'm going to say it, the conservative United States, because most Americans are pro-life. Most Americans are pro-life. And so I think the argument fails with regard to the suggestion that he is just as pro-life as the president. I think that's absurd. I say that because we need to analyze who spoke at the Republican Party, who spoke at the Democratic Party. Did a leader in any way, shape, or form of pro-life get a platform, a position to launch from in the Republican convention? And the answer is no. Did a pro-choice person get positions to launch and put forth their message at the Democratic Party? And the answer is yes, yes, and yes again. In multiple occasions, goodness, the president of Planned Parenthood was given a microphone at the DNC convention. And then finally he says, you're a hyper-Calvinist if you believe God's sovereignty gives you an excuse to not vote or vote a third party. And I would just agree with that. There's no need to even addressing that. If someone says that they can't vote for a Mormon because of their conscience, I understand that. I'm not going to accuse them of being a hyper-Calvinist. Their soteriology does not play into that. There's no reason to even to tie those two things together. And the issue becomes, to what degree are you willing to risk not the total vote, but your state, the state of Ohio, the state of Virginia, the state of North Carolina, the state of Florida, these states, the swing states? Because quite frankly, in the other states, it really doesn't matter. I mean, that's really very practical, pragmatic of me to say, but what really matters is the swing states. And if the evangelical Christians in the swing states do not understand that of the two choices that they have with regard to Mitt Romney and the current president, if those two, if they don't understand that one is consistently pro-choice beyond measure, he is a ultra pro-choice, and even if Mitt Romney is a flip-flopping, struggling man with this issue of abortion, he is the representative of the conservative party, which is pro-life. Well, send me some more thoughts. Send me some more comments. Give me another article to take a look at so we can discuss this some more. PASTOR at BereanBaptistChurch.org. Pastor at BereanBaptistChurch.org. Thanks for sending me the article. Have a great day.